Today on Nurse Talk,
States of Grace, from doctor to patient and back again, San Francisco internist Dr. Grace Dammann is with us today.
Here comes the 2020 Trump budget, and it cuts billions from Social Security and Medicare. Promise made, promise broken. And nurses all over the country joining with thousands to support the Medicare for All Act.
All this and more today on Nurse Talk.
Welcome to Nurse Talk. I'm Casey Hobbs, along with my co-host Shane Mason. Good to have you back in the booth, Shane. And we are two of the thousands of nurses on duty today.
Hey, Casey, as always, we have a great show today. One of our most poignant interviews over the years was the story of Dr. Grace Dammann. Some of our listeners may be familiar with this extraordinary story, which was the subject of the award-winning documentary States of Grace. She'll be with us in just a few minutes.
And let's not forget to thank all of our listeners on Tom Hartman Program, Progressive Voices Tune In, WFTE, iTunes, and all of our broadcast partners and organizational partners. Thank you.
You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls, you'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out, for many men of medicine, usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette. And because they know what a pleasure it is to smoke a mild, good-tasting cigarette, they're particular about the brand they choose. In a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good-tasting a cigarette can be.
I made a decision to be of service to people, and I gave it my all.
We are so pleased to honor Grace for her pioneering work caring for individuals living with and dying from AIDS. Thank you, Grace.
It's happened again. Another head-on crash on the Golden Gate Bridge.
The 60-year-old woman driving suffered major injuries.
I get a phone call that there's been an accident. There was no way that anyone thought she would survive the accident.
It's a real eye-opener to be on the other side of the caretaker-caregiver divide.
She needed an ICU, and then she needed a rehab, and then they sent her home. And where's the doctor? Where's the expert? Where's the nursing staff? Where's the... It's like, well, actually, you're it, fool.
I feel like I've lost a best friend.
Who was your best friend that you lost?
My body.
Mm-hmm. Nothing lasts forever, including great pain, great sorrow, great helplessness. Who am I really now? Who do I want to be now?
It wasn't until after Grace came out of a coma that we even started vaguely thinking about the idea of making a film. Grace spent a year in rehab hospitals, and it was the day that she came home that we realized right off the bat that it was going to be a very amazing story.
Dr. Grace Dammann's life was forever altered when a driver crashed head-on into her car on the Golden Gate Bridge. After a 7-week coma and numerous surgeries, Grace miraculously regained consciousness, with her cognitive abilities intact almost entirely, but her body left shattered and severely disabled.
And it's our great privilege to have Dr. Grace Dammann with us in the studio today. Grace, so wonderful to have you here with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So, Grace, after the accident, you granted director Mark Lipman and Helen Cohen unlimited access to your family, allowing them to follow you as you struggled to reinvent yourself and find meaning and purpose in your radically altered post-accident life, Mark and Helen, to release the story in a documentary film called States of Grace. Can you talk a little bit about that whole process?
Well, let's put it this way. I was obviously brain damaged, or else I wouldn't have agreed to that much exposure. Let me tell you, watching it now, there's a lot of exposure. But anyway, they were my good friends. They are still my great friends. We love it. It's a gift of love on all of our parts. So that's the way I can best state it. It was a gift of love from all of us to anybody in the universe whom we think it will help.
And so fast forward 11 years after the accident, here you are with us today. So can you share with us a little bit about how your life has changed since you were last here in 2015?
Totally. Well, first of all, I'm not living anymore at Green Gulch, although I was head student there this fall for 2 months, practice period. My partner, then partner, Fu, is now the abbess. She was away. So I was second, you know, seat is what you're, in terms of being in a practice period, you're supposed to take care of the younger students. So that completed my Buddhist training. I now live at the Redwoods, which is a senior living facility. Mm-hmm. And it's great in many ways. But I am by far the youngest person there. The average age is 89, mm-hmm. and I was 67 when I moved in. I'm 71 now. Mm-hmm. And I still work, and I still do the pain clinic. I also work at Green Gulch, teach a meditation or two or three courses at the Redwoods. I'm busy.
You are.
I did a chaplaincy program last fall. I'm really busy.
And when you work at Laguna Honda, it's not just the pain clinic. You're also teaching. So right. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I'm also chair of the ethics committee. And as we all know, ethical issues in medicine today are fascinating. We have the third right to die piece of legislation in this state. It's complex, fascinating. So I love that.
And you've been a physician at Laguna Honda for how many years now?
Let's see. I first started moonlighting there when I was in 87.
Okay.
So whenever that was.
Okay.
So you're talking 30 years you've been in Laguna
years,
Honda.
Right.
And so you founded the first inpatient unit for patients with chronic pain at your hospital?
No, AIDS.
AIDS, with
I did
AIDS.
It
okay.
With AIDS.
All right. And you were honored for your work by the Dalai Lama in 2009.
Yeah.
So you've done a lot. Can you talk a little bit about how and why you started the pain clinic?
Well, people with chronic pain was seen as a real problem institutionally. And one of my friends was then the medical director. She said, would you come and start a pain clinic? And I said, hating pain myself, said, I'll think about it over time. And then the next day I called her up and I said, yes, I will do it as long as I can have a team and as long as I can make it exactly what I want. She said, I give you full rein.
Wow, so, that's great.
Remarkable. So talk about your level of pain throughout this, because your body was crushed. On
right. Well, I got 65 units of blood in the first 18 hours, I think.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I was, gosh. That is five times my blood volume. Plus, I had factors 7, 8, you know, platelets up the yin yang.
Yeah. Yeah.
They gave me uncross-matched blood because I'd lost so much. So anyway, yeah, I know something about pain, but I don't really, have never taken it seriously. And I realized early on that opiates were just upping my regulation.
Yeah.
Upregulating, because they made it worse, not better. So very quickly, I weaned myself off the ball of opiates. Wow.
And how do you manage the pain without the opioids?
Well, you develop other strategies. And luckily, I'd sat a lot. I was a meditator. So I understood that pain came and went in nanoseconds. It's not there constantly. It's not even there for 3 minutes. Never can you get somebody to truly focus on pain for more than 3 minutes.
And just for our listeners, I mean, obviously, you know a lot about it. I've had like just chronic back pain, nothing big but years, right. And it's just worn me down.
Right.
And I did a online chronic pain meditation management, and it changed everything for
everything,
me.
Everything,
and I'm a completely different person now.
Right.
So, yeah, right. I can attest to that.
That's remarkable, and it was an online course.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah, so in the clinic, what is the approach that you take for patients?
Pretty much, we talk to the patient first. We do a full intake. We don't prescribe pain medication. However, I do consult with all of the prescribing doctors, and I'm really strong in what I feel, but I don't insist on anything. And then we try to give complementary treatments.
Mm.
We try to get the patient to explore other modalities like touch, any kind of touch. We've got Reiki, mm-hmm. Rolfing, acupuncture, acupressure, acutonics, massage therapy.
Incredible.
And we've got distant healing, medical qigong. We've got people who are licensed to touch doing all of those, not as their first. You know, I'm a doctor, but I also took Rosen body work. And I can't do that very well right now, but I do it in the clinic, you know.
Remarkable. And what's your, I would imagine that you have great success because the opioids is the way that most pain clinics go.
Right.
And that's just a never-ending revolving door.
Well, yeah, and we have our problems with opioids, of course, like any institution, because we've got a lot of people with both chronic pain, chronic psych pain, chronic physical pain, chronic spiritual pain, who've been on opiates forever. It's unrealistic to try to get them off too quickly, but we do make them not escalate. And we don't have a lot of, you know, code blues for inadvertent overdose.
Yeah. Which is huge. Right. I want you to talk a little bit about your Zen practice and how that played a role in all of this in your healing.
Well, I was fortunate enough to live at Green Gulch for about 27 years. And I lived there when I adopted a child who was also HIV infected. She's 26 now, but she was not expected to live beyond her first 6 months of life. And I had a private practice in Mill Valley. I worked at UC. I worked at Laguna Honda setting up their step-down unit. And it was before the cocktail, so it was horrible, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was both horrible and wonderful because there's nothing as bad as a life not lived. Death isn't the bad thing. A life not lived is the bad thing.
So you lived at the Zen Center, and you've talked about how was the change from going from the Zen Center to where you're living now? Was that difficult? Has it been a hard transition?
Well, you know, I miss it on the one hand. And when I moved back there to be head student, they gave me 3 or 4 people to help me out. It was totally unfair that any one person should have to help me out. My partner was just glued to that kind of caretaking role, which he shouldn't have been. I mean, I'm a perfect example of somebody who should not be taken care of by anybody near and dear. I am a person who needs to be taken care of within the public realm. And luckily, I've got a great retirement policy that provides me enough money so that I can afford it.
That's incredible. I wanted you to talk a little bit about you before we started this interview. We were talking about you were an activist in the 60s and 70s and went. So talk about that experience and where it brought you.
Well, it was wonderful. And I can remember my job at the Democratic Convention of 68 was to organize the medical presence. And I remember walking down Michigan Avenue carrying a guy who obviously had had a broken leg. And I fell on top of him because the police were all over us. He didn't get into the hospital. He was taken straight to jail. And I thought, this will not do. You know, this, and I was part of the group that was convincing all my friends, college friends, to come to Chicago and demonstrate. And I thought, this is not right. The means don't justify the ends.
And you were talking about what that did to you spiritually.
What it made me do is keep looking, you know. And I went to Yale Divinity School as an atheist, but I became really enamored by the people with faith who had some hope, some way of having hope in their horizon. And, you know, damned if that wasn't true for me after this accident. I realized that I'd learned everything I needed to know by just sitting one long session. I'd really learned all I needed to know about living. So I was enormously grateful. Also, I met His Holiness. And meeting one hero in your lifetime is enough. Once I had a hero, now I know exactly what kind of person I'd like to be. So he practices a lot. So maybe there's something to this whole practice, working on ourselves, not working on the world.
So, Grace, you know we're nurses, and so we're interested in knowing a little bit about what part nurses played in your career as a physician and also what part they played in your recovery.
That's a really great question. I mean, I've got to say, when I was a patient in the hospital, my rule of thumb was I would pull the covers up anytime I felt somebody come into my room who was depressed. My first rule of thumb is you've got to be happy to be at work. You've got to enjoy what you do. And unfortunately, nurses are way overworked.
Yeah.
Often the most important person in the room was the janitor who always was singing. I loved it. I would make him sing. I'd just say, stay in my room, please. You are the most healing presence.
Mm-hmm. It's just an important part that I want to say to our listeners, to nurses out there. Self-care is key and so very important. Your capacity to give is in equal measures to your capacity to give to yourself. And unless you're giving to yourself and doing for yourself, you're not going to be really good at giving to others.
And also, you've got to give to the staff under you.
Absolutely.
Like, for example, I realized that my job when I came back running the pain clinic was to make sure my staff was happy. I've told all of them, don't come to work if you're depressed. You can come to work if you have a cold. We will mask you up. We can deal with that. Depression, you have no business sharing with the patient population. So we actually operate really as a team. And I think that's what delivering good healthcare should be all about.
And so what part does humor play in your personal and professional life? Because you've cracked a couple jokes in here.
Yes.
So
yes.
Huge, huge. I mean, that was one of the great things that Fu, my ex-partner, could really do. She talked me off the limb many, many times. Mm. And it was mostly by humor. My daughter also, by humor. We're cats, but with a lot of humor.
So in the movie, you say, who am I really now? Who do I want to be? So who are you now?
I'm still everything that I was. But what I'm doing is always listening for what's calling to me. You know, what next? And I think being a Buddhist, doing this last job that I did, being Shusou, being the head student, that took care of my Buddhist training. Now I'm thinking, what's next? And I think it may be writing a book, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just trying to figure it out.
So you and Helen and Mark have been traveling around the country since the launch of States of Grace, and you're sharing your story with thousands of people. You've also created an educational curriculum that's being taught at universities and to healthcare professionals. So where can people find out more about States of Grace and the educational components?
Just go online, States of Grace, you know, no spaces,
okay.
statesofgrace.org.
Okay.
And then they can find the curriculum. We're available always. We're going to New Orleans. We're teaching at, we love this, OT Annual Association mm-hmm. meeting, which is going to be 12,000 people. So Fu and I are giving the keynote address. But we love doing that kind of stuff.
It's so important and definitely something that calls to so many people. I'm so glad you're doing that. So what else would you like to share with our listeners?
Take care of yourselves. Be of good cheer. Have hope, even though it seems ridiculous. Nothing's gained by feeling worried and hateful and distressed about the world, because the world is so beautiful. It's amazing just to watch the sun, the slant of light change, the birds come down. It's wonderful.
Grace. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Grace.
Yep, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
We've been talking with Dr. Grace Dammann. For more information about Grace in the documentary States of Grace, visit openstudioproductions.com or statesofgrace.org.
Don't go away. Coming up, nurses and millions of supporters working hard and smart all across the country to pass the Medicare for All Act. You're listening to Nurse Talk Radio on Progressive Voices TuneIn and all of our broadcast partners.
You're listening to Nurse Talk, where laughter's the best medicine.
We are nurses, so we cannot diagnose, prescribe, or treat. But listen to us anyway, because we like to talk. Welcome back to Nurse Talk. I'm Casey Hobbs, and I am one of the thousands of nurses on duty this very day.
To me, it is immoral that anyone profits off another person's need for health care. And it is repugnant to me that this profit comes from denying care.
Well said. That's National Nurses United RN Melissa Johnson Camacho speaking passionately on behalf of her patients. With momentum building across the country, nurses, along with 70% of Americans, support bold action. That's why the Medicare for All Act of 2019, H.R. 1384, was introduced last month by Representative Pramila Jayapal. To coin the phrase, it takes a village, is no understatement. Nurses and Medicare for All supporters are mobilized and fired up. Here with us to talk about the unique strategies being employed is National Nurses United community organizer Carolyn Bowden. Carolyn, great to have you with us today.
Thanks so much, Casey. Great to be here. And yes, nurses are on duty all the time. Thank you so much for all your service. And I'm so proud to be a part of an organization that is moving this very important issue at a fast pace and moving it forward.
So, Carolyn, there's so much going on. Tell us about your work with cities and municipalities.
Well, it's not a new strategy, but we're really moving this forward. We're getting cities and municipalities all across the country to pass resolutions that, you know, in the whereas is It talks about our broken healthcare system. And then in the therefore be it resolved that the city and county or the municipality supports the movement towards H.R. 1384, which is the Medicare for All Act of 2019, and supports the residents and constituents in that city to reach out to their representative, who may or may not be supporting, and to encourage that representative to support. And it's also a way to engage the local people. You know, I mean, if you think about it, you know, there's that old adage, all politics is local. And so not only do we have to get our members of the House of Representatives to sign onto this bill, but it's great to engage the community and all of the folks that live in these cities and municipalities who are affected by this to also get involved.
Yeah, that's so very important, Carolyn, because the truth is, as we said earlier, 70% of Americans want this.
Everybody in, nobody out. Everybody in, nobody.
We're doing a new organizing strategy across the nation. We started by using barnstorms, and I think you may have had someone who talked about the barnstorm philosophy. But what that is you get a lot of folks who are interested in getting engaged deeply in a room. You're not going through a whole bunch about the bill or about the healthcare, because usually these are folks who want to get active. And then you train them to get out and canvass in their neighborhoods, canvass in their communities, talk to the neighbors about Medicare for All, about our system. And then we ask those people to call their legislators. And so that's one piece. That's like the barnstorm that folds into the canvases and the phone banks. And that's been very effective. I don't know if you know, but within about a three-week period, we were able to get 30 more co-sponsors onto the Representative Jayapal's bill at the end of February. And so when she released the bill, she had 107 original co-sponsors, whereas at the beginning of February, there were 73.
I want to say to our listeners, if they want to get involved in this campaign, it's easy, it's fun, and they just have to visit Medicare with the number 4all.org.
And we have some communities, some partners that have been working with us all over the country. And it's, you know, like our Revolution chapters, Social Security Works, Healthcare Now, a lot of other groups that are really engaged in this. And then you can find and work with groups in your community and maybe visit one of your boards of supervisors or one of your council members and ask them to use this resolution. I believe we will have, if we don't already have, a draft of the resolution we're using for these cities and municipalities. And then you just go and you lobby them and you ask these people to pass a resolution and ask them to get their colleagues to pass it too. I mean, in San Francisco, they haven't yet passed it, but they're about to. So we had unanimous co-sponsorship on this resolution. 11 of 11 said they wanted to sign on to this. So it is possible in your city and your municipality. And it's really about just working with your like-minded neighbors and colleagues. And together we'll build this.
That's so true. What else would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, first of all, thank you, nurses, for all of your work and keeping us all healthy and protecting us. And I hope that as a community organizer, that I can get out there and we can engage more and more people to get involved in this process. And it's actually really easy. Please go to our website, Medicare4all.org. There's lots of great information on there. There's a calendar on there in our action section that lists all the canvases and events that are going on in your community. So it's easy to get involved. So please do that. Medicare4all.org.
So very important. Thank you so much, Carolyn.
Great. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Carolyn, thanks for being with us today, and thanks for all the work you and the thousands of supporters of Medicare for All are doing. It's wonderful work. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We've been talking with National Nurses United, California Nurses Association community organizer Carolyn Bowden. That music can mean only one thing. It's time for Healthcare in America with senior correspondent Donna Smith. Donna, welcome.
Thank you, Casey. It's nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear you too, Donna. So how are you feeling? I know you just are coming off a surgery.
Yeah, I'm coming through it. You know, a little bit of work on the knee, and that's, you know, take some time to heal, but I'm getting through it.
So are you in a straight leg? So you can't bend your knee, I would imagine.
No, they're letting me bend it. It's interesting. I have a really large incision. It goes about 9 inches on my knee, and they've got it dressed. I can even get in the shower, which is interesting.
That's
so
nice.
So I'm not as restricted as I thought I would be, but it hurts.
Are you weight-bearing?
Oh, yeah.
That's quite remarkable. So for those people out there, she broke her kneecap, and your kneecap is a really small bone. And so when you crack it, to put it back together again is very delicate work. And
yep.
Then that kneecap, and why you have to make such a large incision, is because all the muscles and tendons hook to that kneecap. It's very
yep.
critical in the whole working of the knee. So
yep.
good
yeah,
job
in fact,
that you got
I
through
asked
it.
One of the nurses, the nurses were so wonderful, but I asked one of them why I was hurting above my knee so much, and she said because they have to cut your quads.
Yes, yes. Because all of those intersect with the kneecap, so.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, it's very delicate surgery and kind of complicated.
Yep.
Well, so now, Donna, I don't know which is worse, having the knee and having surgery, or Trump's 10-year budget unveiled Monday calls for more than $845 billion in reductions to Medicare.
It just is so mind-boggling. Let's talk about how big that number is. $845 billion is getting real close to $1 trillion. So you end up cutting that much money from the Medicare budget. Don't tell us that's all waste, fraud, and abuse, because it's not. And we know what will happen with patients in that process, and with nurses too, is as the providers have cuts to what they're getting in terms of reimbursement, they're not going to want to serve Medicare patients as much as they have in the past.
Which is designed to do. I'm sorry, but it's just interesting to me that he's pushing this forward at a time where 70% of Americans want Medicare for all.
Yep.
And we're supposed to think those two aren't connected. Yeah, it's outrageous. So they also say that these cuts are bipartisan. Come on, is that true?
Right, right. That is not true. And the Democrats have long called for appropriate kinds of monitoring of what people do with Medicare. Now, the reality is, of course, there is some fraud. Of course, there is some waste in the Medicare program. There are always, whenever there's money involved, there's always going to be people who take advantage of that money, whether it is public money or private money. They're going to try and take advantage of it. And the reality for most Americans is that if you go to your provider and you go to your hospital, those people are not defrauding you. They are not abusing the Medicare program. It's the people who have, you know, these freestanding clinics that do, you know, 100 of a certain procedure on patients who may or may not need them. That's a different thing. And yes, Democrats have called for monitoring that more. So have Republicans. That's where bipartisan efforts come in. But not cutting the program by $845 billion.
So do you think that this is going to come to pass before the 2020 election? And do you think that Congress would pass this kind of a bill?
I highly doubt it, you know, especially after seeing that at least a few of the Republicans stood up to Trump on his latest issues. The reality is this Congress is not going to pass a budget that does that. These congressional members must go back to their districts and answer for what Trump is proposing here. They're not going to want to do that. There will be significant negotiations. Now, having said that, every single one of us ought to weigh in with our congressional members, our senators, our House of Representatives rep, and say to them, we want you fighting for a sound and secure budget for Medicare. And that includes, yeah, of course, looking for any legitimate causes for abuse, but also making sure that you protect the program so that everybody who needs services can get them, and so that they don't get any wild ideas about making Trump happy. But no, I don't think it can pass before the 2020 election, and I think it would be suicide for the Republicans if they did so.
So, Donna, thank you always for being with us. I so appreciate it, and I hope that your healing becomes complete very soon.
Thank you so much. It's always good to be on Nurse Talk.
We've been talking with Nurse Talk senior correspondent and contributor to Healthcare in America, Donna Smith. For more information about these topics, visit nursetalksite.com. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thank you to our executive producer, Patty Lockard, sound design and engineering, June Miller and JMC Sound, Taylor Lockard Research, and National Nurses United, and all the nurses on duty today, and of course, our listeners and our guests. Take care and visit us at nursetalksite.com or like our Facebook page at Nurse Talk. Today on Nurse Talk, after decades of fighting, nurses join thousands to gather in the nation's capital for Representative Pramila Jayapal's launch of the new Medicare for All bill, a bill that has strong support from a broad coalition.
And yes, there really is a congressional resolution to introduce and create a new Green Deal. And we have a guest who will talk with us about the details.
And Planned Parenthood funding still on the chopping block.
All this and more today on Nurse Talk.
Welcome to Nurse Talk. I'm Casey Hobbs, along with my co-host Patty Lockard, filling in for Shane Mason, and I am one of the thousands of nurses on duty this very day.
Hey, Casey, as always, we have a great show today. In a few moments, we'll have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Barbara Sattler, professor at University of San Francisco, an international leader in environmental health and nursing. Dr. Sattler will be talking about the new Green Deal resolution, recently introduced in the House of Representatives, by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or as the Republicans like to call it, her kindergarten project.
And let's not forget to thank all of our listeners on the Tom Hartman Program, Progressive Voices Tune In, WFTE, iTunes, and all of our broadcast and organizational partners. Thank you.
We are going to transition this country into the future.
The Green New Deal calls for a 10-year national mobilization. The goal in one short decade to bring greenhouse gas emissions to zero, meet 100% of energy needs by renewable sources, overhaul transportation systems.
Expanding a high-speed rail to, quote, a scale where air travel stops becoming necessary.
It would modernize U.S. infrastructure, upgrade or replace every building for energy efficiency,
create millions of high-paying jobs, bring equality and equal justice for underserved, minority, and impoverished communities.
The new Green Deal is a set of proposed economic stimulus programs in the United States that aim to address climate change and economic inequality. The Green New Deal combines Roosevelt's economic approach with modern ideas such as renewable energy and resource efficiency. At least according to Wikipedia, that is.
However, if you listen to opponents, they will tell you it's a big green bomb that will blow a hole in our strong economy, it will cost $93 trillion, and will destroy our energy independence. How can we sort through this proposed deal? With us is the University of San Francisco and international leader in environmental health and nursing, Barbara Sattler. Barbara, welcome to Nurse Talk. So great to have you back with us today.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Barbara, before we start talking about why you have an interest in the Green Deal, it's worth mentioning that you are the founding member of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, which is an international organization that's helping to integrate environmental health into nursing education, practice, research, and policy and advocacy. So you come to this conversation with years of work in environmental health and health policy. Why'd you take this path?
That goes back a really long way. I was one of the first organizers of Earth Day in 1970. So as a nurse, I also recognized that a lot of the causes of cancer and chronic diseases and other things that we're suffering really emanate from exposures that we were having, and that this was really little addressed in the nursing world. And so many of the things in the Green Deal are actually related to that. So when we think about transportation and energy and even agriculture, there are so many different kinds of exposures that affect people immediately and also secondarily from some of these things. So changing these systems is really about health. And I want to be very clear that all illnesses are not a function of environmental exposures, but it's a serious and important component of the etiology of diseases that we must take into account. And nurses aren't learning about this in nursing school still, even though we know the importance of it. So I guess one of the transitions for me was that I worked as a nurse at San Francisco General, and I was involved in SEIU. I was one on the contract negotiation team there. And what we started looking at some health and safety issues even as early as that. And shortly thereafter, I through a circuitous route, I wound up working with a nonprofit organization that was working with labor and looking at toxic chemical exposures that workers had. And that was really the launch, to just see how many different chemicals that we work with in our workplaces.
Okay, Barbara, let's talk about some of the highlights of the new Green Deal resolution. Citing the special report referred to that points to the causes and urgencies to quickly mitigate the harm.
Sure. Well, and this is another issue that's near and dear to my heart, is really helping nurses to understand what climate change is, because one in every 100 Americans is a registered nurse. We're in all our communities. We need to be able to say what it is and talk about it with our communities and help bring that sort of scientific translation to the communities, especially in places where we may have politicians who are denying science and denying its existence. So a big impetus of the Green New Deal has come from young people who are saying, we in the, you know, established political roles are not moving fast enough on this, and this is really about their future. And then they began to really think about, okay, what do we need to do? And we need to do a lot of things and do them fast. We can't just be doing one thing at a time. So the way they framed this is really to look at the many sectors that are both contributing to greenhouse gases, which creates climate change, but also where we could tweak things that would reduce those greenhouse gases, and in some instances with agriculture, actually sequester some of the carbon. So we'd be rolling things back. But it means taking on these things all at once and with a lot of speed right now, because we really need to be moving quickly.
So how would the new Green Deal work, and how would it be implemented?
So at this point in time, it is in a resolution stage in Congress, meaning that the House of Representatives and senators would have to vote to support a resolution that would move us to then really working on developing the specifics of it. So it's not an act per se, which, you know, is what becomes like the Occupational Safety and Health Act. It's not in that form yet, but it is something that is promoting an idea and with urgency. And what gave me a chuckle as I was reading, and I can't remember whether it was in Forbes or Fortune, and it said, don't panic. It's only a vision. I thought, oh,
wow.
That's when they really should panic.
Yes,
we are finally congealing around a vision. And that's what this is. And that's what's getting young people so excited. It's like something where they can kind of take hold and brand that vision into the future to have relevance for their lives. I was on a call 2 weeks ago. There were 1,000 people on the call. Almost all of them were young people, and by young, I mean 18 to 22-year-olds. And on this call, Naomi Klein was the only, I'm going to call, adult speaker, meaning older than 25, who talked about the urgency and had a very nice critique of how capitalism has really gotten us into this mess and that we need to address that. But within that hour conversation and hour call, over 500 young people committed to go to talk about the Green New Deal to the district office of their federal legislators.
Great.
That is inspiring.
Great.
I was so excited to hear that they were mobilizing and are mobilizing. So we need to be joining them, and we need to be allowing them to really stretch and use those new political muscles and supporting them in that.
Definitely. Barbara, how would we ever transition from air travel to no air travel, from fossil fuels to no fossil fuels, and how much time would it take and how much money? That's what the opponents of this will point to.
Well, the air travel is going to be a tough one. An enormous amount of air travel is business air travel. And you and I are in two different places right now, and we're doing our business. I do almost all of my departmental meetings using Zoom. I mean, we're really moving into people being able to do things without traveling hundreds and thousands of miles in order to sit in a room with somebody for, you know, a few hours and then travel back. So much of that can really be changed by just employing very good technology that allows people to be in the same room but virtually. But in terms of what we can be doing, we need to just even look at a couple of countries and a couple of states to see that we're already doing that. We already have the path forward. Costa Rica is, I think it's 9 months of the year, is 100% on renewables. Now, granted, it's a small country, but they're giving us an opportunity to see how we could model this. California is in a rigorous state of transition in many ways, really moving towards renewables. And we really need to be cutting off our fossil fuel engagement and stop giving new permits and really moving at reducing that much faster. And we're really talking about how can we create the conditions that we increase public transportation and make it really user-friendly for everybody? And how is it that we can build housing that is going to be energy efficient and build it around smart transportation? There are lots of places around the country where commuting is becoming stressful, a headache, and just a miserable part of our daily lives. So we need to be doing this in a much, much better way.
That's so true. So I understand it's in the resolution stage, but what is the target date for this to start? When would we see this become legislation that could come to a vote?
I think this is probably going to become a major part of the next presidential debate. I'm not sure that we're going to see anything that would come to a vote, and I believe that Trump would probably veto it in any event. I just think that this is setting the table, and I think that what we're bringing to it is a feast of ideas, and that those ideas are going to have to be honed. They're going to have to make sense economically, and that's not where we are just yet. But there are a lot of people that are coming on board that have the skill set to help us really write this into something that's going to be able to be a cogent bill with financial incentives and disincentives that are going to really help us. And also putting it in terms of return on investment, that's got to be a many-year sort of road in terms of when we look at when we'll get investment back or return on investment. The other thing I quickly want to mention is that currently in this Green New Deal, healthcare for all is part of that conversation. And I think all nurses can completely rally around that, how important we need to be working on bringing healthcare for all as part of any conversation to really change what needs to be changed in this country. So there are a couple of things that folks can do. If they go to Green New Deal, the Sunrise Coalition is a group mostly of young people who have been really one of the places, the inceptions of this thinking. The Sunrise Coalition has its own site. If you Google Green New Deal, you'll find lots of places as well as responses to this. And the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, we are going to be starting to track this and put information on our climate change page. So we'll start having information sort of for and by nurses as well. And if I could say just very quickly, because I know you have a national audience, that the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments has new funding from the Kresge Foundation to create 30 new nursing fellows around the country who are working with their communities to build resiliency and to address environmental health issues. And so if they go to the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments website, they can just scroll down and they'll find these environmental health nursing fellowship opportunities.
That's some great information. Barbara, I want to thank you for your years of nursing, but particularly for wedding those two nursing and environmental factors. Not that all diagnoses are related, but there is a good amount that are related. So it's nice to that you made that connection and that you've been spending your career doing the good fight. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I think that this is such an exciting time, and there are so many people now. There are moms, there are millennials, there are labor groups that are being brought to the table to talk about what our future should look like. And I want to make sure that every single nurse, no matter what your job in nursing is, that your voices are so important because we're the voice of health. And when it comes down to it, that's the most important thing to people and to family members. So bring those voices, bring them to this particular debate and these discussions, and we will move farther faster.
Brilliant.
Thank you for providing an opportunity for this.
That's great. We've been talking with Dr. Barbara Sattler about the congressional resolution for a Green New Deal put forth by the Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Barbara, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Please come back again. For more information about this topic, visit nursetalksite.com or envirn.org.
Don't go away. Much more to come. You're listening to Nurse Talk Radio on Progressive Voices. Tune in and all of our broadcast partners.
You're listening to Nurse Talk, where laughter's the best medicine.
Our money-driven healthcare system has created a bunch of liars. Health insurance companies let you think your coverage is better than it really is. Doctors don't tell you how payment rules influence the care they provide. Drug companies exaggerate how effective their drugs are. Hospitals overstate what their services really cost. It doesn't have to be this way. We need to stop the lies. We need single payer. California OneCare.
California OneCare. Full care for all, for less.
You're listening to Nurse Talk, where laughter's the best medicine.
Ooh, it's so damn cold in here.
Yeah, the producer's having hot flashes.
I'm not the one with the buttons, for Christ's sakes.
Hey, Casey, what time is it?
Time to stay out of trouble.
We are nurses. We cannot prescribe, diagnose, or treat, but we can give good advice.
Does that include fashion advice?
Nah, stick to what you're good at.
You should talk. Welcome back to Nurse Talk. I'm Casey Hobbs, along with Patty Lockard filling in for Shane Mason. I am one of the thousands of nurses on duty this very minute.
My name is Pramila Jayapal. I'm proud to represent Washington's 7th Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives. And we stand here today because it is time to transform our healthcare system in America.
Last week, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal introduced a new and improved version of the House Medicare for All bill, called the Medicare for All Act of 2019. With record public support among the Democrats now controlling the House, passing the Medicare for All Act of 2019 in the House is within sight. But to do so, we must build as much public support as possible to call on our elected officials to sign on.
It is time to ensure that health care is a right and not a privilege guaranteed to every person in our country. It is time for Medicare for All.
Standing on the steps of the nation's capital, Jayapal also thanked those who have worked decades to make Medicare for All a reality, including National Nurses United, the nation's largest union of direct care nurses.
I'm Bonnie Castillo, the executive director of National Nurses United, the largest union of registered nurses in the country. As a registered nurse, it is a profound feeling to be standing here today with Representative Jayapal, with the House co-sponsors, and also with brothers and sisters across the country who are standing up to demand an end to human suffering in the name of corporate profit. To us, these horror stories of our broken system is a deeply personal issue.
Here with us to talk about the introduction and how people can get involved is National Nurses United community organizer for the Sacramento, California area, Philip Kim. Philip, thanks so much for being with us today.
Sure, yeah, glad to be on.
So, Philip, as we just heard Bonnie Castillo say, nurses have been on the front lines of the Medicare for All fight for decades. What feels different about this current movement and the congressional leadership?
What we see now is the fight for single-payer Medicare for All has reached mainstream popularity for a combination of reasons: the insecurity of our current economy, record levels of inequality, and I think the outrageous cost of health insurance in America in this profit-driven system. More and more people are realizing that we need something better, and that solution is Medicare for All. So what we have now is enormous grassroots energy. This is really a movement moment that I think is connected to what we're seeing in other issues, too, like the fight for the Green New Deal and immigration reform and affordable housing, criminal justice reform. And what we're seeing now is an overwhelming majority of the public now supports Medicare for All. And so what we're doing now is we're translating that support into pressure on our elected representatives so that they do the right thing and co-sponsor the new Medicare for All Act of 2019, H.R. 1384. And one more thing about the congressional leadership, like you mentioned, we have representatives like Pramila Jayapal, amazing progressive leaders, as well as newly elected young leaders like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York and Rashida Tlaib in Michigan. And they want bold action and a real solution to the healthcare crisis, not watered down corporate half measures that don't address the real problem. So that's what I think is different about the current moment.
Talk about everybody in and nobody out. What does that mean?
The Medicare for All Act of 2019 covers everybody in the country. Everybody is covered, children, seniors, everyone in between. The goal here is a comprehensive single-payer healthcare system that covers people from cradle to grave, and which is actually very common in most other industrialized countries in the world. We're the rarity, and it shows in terms of our health outcomes. But as far as everybody in and nobody out, the other part of this is we have comprehensive coverage. The Medicare for All Act of 2019 covers vision, dental, mental health care, long-term care and support services. It's, I believe, the first time that that's been included in a Medicare for All bill. And this is the most progressive and most comprehensive Medicare for All bill to ever be introduced in the House of Representatives.
A recent poll showed 70% of respondents support Medicare for All, with 85% Democrats and 52% Republican support. What are nurses and their allies doing to grow that support among the American public and also to get the support of representatives in Congress?
What the nurses are doing, National Nurses United, in partnership with other organizations like Healthcare Now and Physicians for a National Health Program and many other groups, the teachers as well, the American Federation of Teachers are in support of this bill. What we're doing is we're building a grassroots movement from the ground up, because we know that this sort of change and taking on the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry and Republicans, we need people who are willing to get involved in their communities, go knock on doors and talk to people in farmers markets. And so a couple of weeks ago, we launched our big national campaign with 150 barnstorms all across the country in districts in all states from Puerto Rico to California to Alaska and Hawaii. And each of those barnstorms, which were mass organizing meetings, created dozens of canvases. So what we have going on now, including today, is thousands of people are out canvassing, knocking on doors, going to public areas, farmers markets, and in front of supermarkets, talking to their fellow citizens about the fight for Medicare for All and asking people to call the representative to get their U.S. representative to co-sponsor the bill. So that's, I'd say, the primary thing that we're doing right now. We do have some members of Congress, including Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who've expressed skepticism and doubt about our Medicare for All bill. And so what we have to do is we have to build a movement so big and so powerful that we can overwhelm some of these establishment Democrats that are not getting on board. And what we're seeing is, what I believe, is that some of these elected officials who've been in office for decades are out of touch with the problems that regular working class Americans are facing every single day. And so what we have to do is we have to go out there and translate that 70% public support into pressure on our representatives to get them to do the right thing and co-sponsor H.R. 1384, the Medicare for All Act of 2019. And so, you know, folks are getting involved in the canvassing. If you want to get involved in that, if you go to Medicare, the number 4all.org, that's medicareforall.org/actions, you can find the canvas that's closest to you. We're using a lot of tech tools to make it as easy as possible for people to plug into this really important campaign.
Again, we've been talking with National Nurses United community organizer Philip Kim. For more information about how you can get involved in your community, go to Medicare4all.org.
Thank you, Philip, for your time. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Thank you so much for having me on, and it's really an honor to be able to represent the nurses out there in the community. The last thing I would say is just that we need you to get involved. You know, in order to pass Medicare for All, in order to make this happen, we need thousands of regular people getting involved. So please go to medicareforall.org and find the canvas that's closest to you. And if you want to contact us to host a canvas, If you email us at info@medicareforall.org, that's the best way to contact us.
Great. Thank you so much.
Right now, we are in a moment where the majority of people throughout the country are understanding and demanding the right to health care.
That's right.
So I want to say that we thank Representative Jayapal for shepherding this legislation that will save so many lives. Nurses especially applaud the work, all of the hard work that went into making this the most comprehensive Medicare for All bill to date.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Healthcare in America with Donna Smith. Donna, welcome and thanks so much for being with us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right, Donna, we understand you have an update on the continued financial funding assault on Planned Parenthood.
I do, and the Trump administration has made the decision to issue an executive order to forbid any of the funding that comes through the Federal Family Planning Fund, which is a fund of $286 million, to go to any organization that either performs or refers to another organization that performs abortions. Now, what this means for Planned Parenthood is tens of millions of dollars lost in their budget and in their planning, which is just horrible for all the millions of women who get their care through Planned Parenthood.
Well, this is a different assault then. It's cutting deeper, is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is far deeper because it talks about even referrals. And what really strikes me is how interesting this is that we have people who claim they don't want the government involved in your health care. Well, oh, my gosh, they just put the government right in the middle of women's health care, that's for sure.
Well, they never want government involved in men's health care, but certainly they have no issue if the women of the world have to suffer at their hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, does this affect all the Planned Parenthoods across the country?
Yes, all the way across the country. No one is exempt from this problem. And none of the Planned Parenthood clinics will be treated any differently. That they will all lose funding. Now, I know that Planned Parenthood will probably have to do a huge amount of readjustment of its budget. Of course, anyone, tens of millions of dollars lost that they were providing care with? I mean, it's just ludicrous to think that they'll even be able to provide the same kind of service. And people who think that Planned Parenthood is just about abortions, that couldn't be further from the truth. They provide all sorts of birth control planning, family planning, mammograms, the kinds of things that women need on an ongoing basis. Think of the damage that will be done to women's health overall from this. You know, put aside the whole issue of pro-life and abortion. This is just a horrible assault. And, you know, the sooner we get back to some sanity in this country about how we're treating health care, the better.
Donna, there was something else that you thought was important to share with our listeners about the Registered Nurses Response Network.
Oh, absolutely. And here's another thing that our country has been struggling with. We have the RNRN network, which, you know, is called into action every time there's some kind of huge tragedy where health is really impacted. Well, that's happening at our southern borders. I read a story recently. It came out in one of the news releases about the RNs going down to help with health care in Tucson. And it turns out that at the border, even some one child, his asthma inhaler clearly marked with his name and that he needed it, the border agents just threw away at the border.
Ugh.
What is this asthmatic child supposed to do while he's in their detention center or wherever he is? What is his mother supposed to do? I mean, this is reprehensible stuff, again, being done to the most vulnerable of our populations. And, you know, this is not about immigration, the nurses going down to help with this. This is about health and human health and showing some humanity. I remember when I was in D.C., we were working on the RNRN response on the Haiti earthquake. Well, this is really no different. It may not be something that made the top of the news every day like the Haiti earthquake did, but I'll tell you what, those folks who are suffering in Tucson and suffering in El Paso and suffering in the other places where detention centers, they're suffering here in Denver. They need health care, and thank goodness to the nurses of the response network who are going in and helping provide some help and some sanity for these people.
So very true. Well, Donna, as always, thank you for being with us. We're talking with Nurse Talk senior correspondent and contributor to Healthcare in America, Donna Smith. For more information about these topics, visit nursetalksite.com.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our executive producer, me, sound design and engineering, June Miller, and JMC Sound, Taylor Lockard Research.
And National Nurses United and all the nurses on duty today, and of course, our listeners and guests.
Take care and visit us at nursetalksite.com or like our Facebook page at Nurse Talks.